Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to this week's Once of All. This week we're going to talk about the latest episode, which was Selfless, Brave, and True. Tonight, I have with me Laura, who's been absent for so long and is finally back. Hi, Laura.
Hello, I know. I've been off stage managing, and I'm finally done, or almost done, but I could come in to record tonight. So, yay, happy to be back.
And then we have Jess, who's always with us, which is awesome. Hello, Jess.
Hello.
So tonight we're going to jump in to the conversation. Or first we're going to start off with our reactions. Thumbs up, thumbs down. How did you guys feel? Laura, why don't you go ahead and start?
It was a thumbs up for me. I think particularly it was a thumbs up for me because I really did not like Owen at all. And now I like Owen. I felt like we finally had the mystery of Owen. We had some depth to his character. And of course was wondering what the hell happened to August. So for me, for a lot of unexplained mysteries being explained, definite thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I liked the episode. It wasn't my favorite, mostly because I was so frustrated by the stupid Tamara character, but I was so happy to find out what was going on with August, where he's been, like, all that I absolutely loved.
Yeah, see, for me, I think it kind of struck a middle ground. There were things I really liked about it. I liked the August parts. I liked the Neil and Emma moments too. I thought those were really cool. The parts that bothered me were, I think it's because it was so obvious. Like, once we figured out who Greg/Owen was, like, the Tamara thing that we had all guessed a couple weeks ago wasn't that far behind. So that kind of felt like it was like, oh yeah. Like, I feel like there have been moments like that throughout this season in particular where they've been kind of like, oh yeah, we guessed that like ages ago. So I think that kind of brought it down a little bit. But in general, I thought the episode was good. And there were a lot of things, like Laura said, we got our questions answered about August, and which only raises more questions about August because now he's just going to be a little boy forever. And we're not going to get the other August back because that's kind of sad.
That's real sad. First Graham, now August.
They're killing me here. So that'd be something we talk about later. But yeah, those are the kinds of things that, I mean, I liked and I didn't like some of the things. So, I mean, it was a good episode, but it wasn't like, oh my God, I loved it. Right when it starts, we kind of get this pouty, whiny Mary Margaret, again, curled up in bed. And then we get Charming kind of babying her. And Emma's like, you're done, Dad. Like, knock it off. Tell her to get out of bed. I was like, the voice of reason has spoken. Yes.
Oh, but, finally. Yeah, totally.
I know.
So, oh, like, Emma and Charming kind of have this argument about it. And I thought that was really interesting, too. Because they have this very different take on who Mary Margaret / Snow White should be and how she should be handling this. And I thought it was awesome to kind of see them have a moment where they truly disagreed on how this should be handled and how she should be handled.
It reminded me a little bit of the Harry Potter books, where in Order of the Phoenix, you have, like, caps lock of rage Harry, like, throughout most of the book, and you just are like, oh my God! He's just, like, Harry's getting really annoying, and then Ginny finally tells him to get his head out of his backside. And to me, that's kind of what this was with Emma, you know, saying, no, enough is enough. We are not enabling this anymore.
Yeah, you know I was happy because last week that was like one of my biggest complaints with the episode was like, dear God, she needs to get up and like move on. Yeah, it happened. It sucks. Move on. Like bad things happen. You do make mistakes. And so I was so glad that Emma or somebody finally had the guts to say this is getting absurd.
And then I thought it was kind of interesting because she gets herself up out of bed and what does she do? She goes into the woods to shoot some arrows. And I'm like, that's an interesting choice. After everything that's happened, you go to shoot things.
Well, so I understood that. Like a stress relief for her. Yeah. She needed to get out and do something physical. And that's like a relaxing stress relief activity. So like I kind of related to that. I've definitely been mopey before and gone out and shot my bow.
As you do there, Katniss, as you do.
Yeah. That's great. Oh my gosh.
So, you know. So yeah, so there was that. And then, of course, she shoots August in the leg, as you do, once again. You know, he was wooden. You can just take him for a tree. I get it. So you have that moment as well, and we kind of get some August Snow interaction, and he's like, don't tell anybody. And, of course, Snow goes and tells everybody. Again, as you do when you live in Storybrooke, and You're involved in everyone's lives. But before we get to August and all of his issues and shortcomings, let's talk a little bit about Neil and Emma. Because we have this moment where Neil and Emma are discussing Tamara, and it is just all kinds of awkward. Did anyone else feel like it was really awkward? Like, Neil didn't want to say too much, and he almost felt really guilty about it, but at the same time, Emma's like, yeah, whatever, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. And you know, okay, and if you don't know, I'm going to clue you all in right now. When a girl says, it's fine, it is not fine.
Yes,
you remember Pretty Woman? Yeah. Do you remember? Because, so yeah,
true.
It is not fine. Fine is the worst word on the face of the earth when a woman is using it. Nothing is ever fine. Okay? Just keep that in mind, everyone.
So true.
Well, you know what it is, too? There is such a fantastic chemistry just between the two of them as actors, anyway. You know, it's one thing to be cast opposite somebody that you're in a relationship with or within a ex-relationship with. And obviously you do the scene and everything, but there's sometimes a really amazing chemistry. And I feel like the chemistry between Emma and Bay is just really good. I mean, and I know he's only had such little time on screen with Tamara, but it's just not there on the same level. Like, there's just such an undercurrent of sexual tension with Emma. It's really, really good. So I think that played that scene to another depth.
Yeah, and that's what's so good about it too. You can tell, like, there's a moment in that scene and you're just like, dude, he still loves you. He's being an idiot right now because he's a little confused and all of this is a little bit much. But at the same time, there's that undertone of you two belong together. You have this son. You're trying to work it out. And the other girl's just awkward. Like, she's going to come in, she'll make it awkward, but it'll resolve itself. Like, that's kind of the vibe I get from that whole thing.
You just know that, yeah. Like, this awkward moment, Emma and Bay trapped in, like, a cabin alone in the woods, away from everybody else, scene is coming at some point. Like, you just know something like that. Like, the two of them have not been alone yet and forced, really, to deal with each other. Like, you just know this is coming down the pike somewhere, or some version of something like that is coming.
Yep. Yeah. And then watch out. So I thought that was a very interesting and awkward and really fun scene to kind of introduce us into how Tamara would come into Storybrooke and how that was gonna kind of play out. And I think Emma's biggest point in that whole conversation was she needs to know who you are, because you can't just bring someone into this blindly. It doesn't work that way. And then I forgot what she called Greg. She made the food-loving Greg or something like that, which I thought was really funny, her little jab at him. So I think that was a really interesting way for Emma to kind of leave that conversation. And then clearly in the next scene, Tamara comes in. It's all kinds of awkward as they're telling Henry about how they met, which was, again, really awkward. And then you have Neil trying to tell Tamara that he comes from the Enchanted Forest. I'm not sure he's the most smooth when it comes to, like, breaking the truth to someone.
Right?
He's like, well, I come from this place called the Enchanted Forest. I'm like, you sound a little cuckoo, buddy, even to me. And I know this is a TV show. So I think that was really interesting, too, because there was no finesse or, like, going into it easy to kind of explain that he comes from somewhere else. And, yeah, it wasn't good. It's almost like he wanted it to fail.
Right. And he's also lived in this world, obviously, for decades. So it's not like he's just innocently going at this explanation, not having a lot of experience in this world. He fully knows what our world is like. So I agree. It was not the most finessed speech ever.
No, he could have, like, eased it up a little bit. Maybe, you know, kind of showed her the storybook, perhaps, a little more or something. He had props. He could have utilized that. Yeah, but
there were so many ways he could have gone about that would have made way more sense. But no.
Yeah. Oh, just, you know, just bring on the blue fairy. Have her throw fairy dust. Piss right? off Regina. Have her do a little magic. There's your explanation.
Exactly.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. Neil is not... I think the thing I love most about Neil is that he does things really awkwardly. Like, he does not know how to interact with females and be okay with it. You can tell, like, his interactions with Emma, and that's a whole different kind of awkward because of their past. And then you have the interactions with Tamara, which don't really seem comfortable either, even though she's his fiance. Like, you would think if they were engaged, it would be a little bit more comfortable than what it is. And it's not. There's, like I said, he's just kind of an awkward character in a sense. And I really enjoy that about him. He's not like smooth and everything doesn't come easy to him. And I like that awkwardness about his character.
He's a very real dude.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what I like about it, is that it isn't kind of like showy in any way. There isn't anything that, you know, makes him his fairy tale character as well as his real life character. He just is who he is, which is enjoyable. So once we see the very awkward Neil try to talk with both Emma and then Tamara, which neither conversation goes well, we get to see more of August being wooden, and we learn that August is fully wooden, there's no escaping it, it's because he wasn't true. So his curse has come back and it stayed, and the spell the Blue Fairy put on him didn't work because he didn't follow through on his end of the deal. So Mary Margaret goes back and immediately tells Geppetto and Emma, I found August, he's all wooden, he's in his trailer in the woods. Between that time and when they actually go out into the woods, we get a flashback from August. And we see that August was in Thailand, I believe. And he was in Thailand and he had started to turn wooden then, because, and that was, you know, long ago that he had started to turn wooden. And so he seeks out help from someone called the Dragon. And the Dragon tells him, you must give me something personal of yours to make it bind, and then you must pay. So the thing that that Pinocchio gives him is the string that Geppetto had first made him animated with. And then he says, you must pay $10,000. August doesn't have $10,000. So he goes out, and he had seen this girl prior at the Dragons. She was leaving the Dragons when he was coming in, and it just happens to be Tamara. So they run into each other at the bar and they're talking, and she says, you know, I'm terminally ill. I have cancer, and I'm, you know, somebody told me about this person, so I'm going to make it work and I'm going to try and save myself. And so what August does is, in order to save himself, he steals the money that she has to pay the Dragon. He goes back, he gets the potion, if you will, from the Dragon that's supposed to help save himself. But in the process, Tamara hunts him back down and takes the potion from him and uses it for herself and leaves August, who's still turning to wood. So we kind of have that whole scene. Were you guys at all surprised to see Tamara in the flashbacks with August, or somehow involved in something that isn't non-magical?
I wasn't expecting her in this particular place, you know, when she turned around, but I was absolutely expecting her to be somehow connected. As soon as I saw her face, I was like, okay, yep, that makes sense. There we go. This is the connection. Let's find out what's going on here.
Obviously, there were all these other worlds, and obviously, since Baez, or Neil, I should say, has a history with Hook, and there are all these other magical communities. To me, it would strike me as him being Rumpelstiltskin's son. He's got, the biggest freaking bullseye on his back. To me, just, you'd have to be suspicious of anybody who attached themselves to him. Because it just strikes me that there are so many people that want something from what Rumpelstiltskin, and clearly he is Rumpelstiltskin's Achilles heel. It would just, anybody who's near him, to me, is just suspect right on its face.
I just can't wait to see how this one unravels itself, because it's so kind of twisted on lots of levels. So I'm very much looking forward to see how that all plays out.
I did have a question, though. Obviously, they made a very big deal of the fact why he was turning into wood and everything is basically at the root of it. He was basically lying to himself constantly. And obviously, that's the whole Pinocchio lie thing coming in, that his motivations were not pure. They were not true. He had an ulterior motive, or he was going back on his word, or whatever it was. And I don't think the potion was one thing, but it was the bottom line is that he had to want to be altruistic and good and self-sacrificing and just be the best person he could be. So now here's a question. Mary Margaret has this blackening of her soul. And to me, she clearly regrets it. She knows it's wrong. It doesn't sound like she ever wants to go down that path again. But it's almost like that's taking her over, when she does the slap. And it's I don't know, I'm having a hard time with that. Because, to me, it's is it taking away her free will? Because I feel like August had the free will, you know what I'm saying, to make his choice. And when he was making bad choices, his life was going badly. And Mary Margaret, now that she's trying to fix it, it seems like it's not going well. And I don't know, I'm finding that a little incongruous.
Yeah, last week my question was, why aren't other people's hearts black as coal? Like, if all she did was have a hand in Cora's death, not even be the one to really execute the death, but to have a hand in it, why is she the only one who's kind of coming up this way with this blackness under her heart and the slap of Geppetto? And, like, I don't get it. Like, to me, it seems like a plot hole. I don't know how it works. There isn't enough information about it that's continuous with everyone else's storylines that it makes sense to me. So I don't know. I don't really have an answer either. I feel like it's kind of a plot hole.
Yeah, like, is she seriously the only one in the entire, like, fairy tale kingdom who's ever committed premeditated murder? I mean, not for nothing, but, like, most fairy tales, people are hacking things right and left. It does seem a little, you know, odd that she would be the only one like this.
That's why I still, like, part of me, and I know they presented it in a way to make it seem as though this isn't the case, but part of me still wonders if this is Regina's trick, if this is how Regina's going to bring Snow White down without betraying her trust, Henry's trust in her, because it is so subtle and manipulative. Like, if she gets it in Mary Margaret's head that you are doomed to become evil, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way. And
that's
so
good. I didn't think of that. That's actually a really, I think to me, that's a very plausible explanation. I really like that.
Yeah,
because that's
do
the
too.
Only thing that makes sense to me, because like we've discussed last week and you guys have brought up again, everybody's heart should be black. Like, everybody's done horrible things and yet they're okay and can still do good things and have good results. Like, it doesn't make sense unless it's something like that, at least to me.
Well, and the series just keeps making so much about true love and love's true kiss and you know, and doing the most for what you love. And you think at a certain point, for some level, for Regina or Rumpel to be fully redeemable, they have to be selfless and you know, and love plays a huge part of this. And it just seems like if Snow's heart was blackened, well, then there's absolutely no redemption whatsoever possible for Regina and Rumpel. And then why would we be watching? Like, it doesn't make sense. I agree with you.
Yes, I like that suggestion a lot, Jess. I think it's much more plausible than everything else we have kind of being thrown at us. So I hope that's true.
Because it just, like, her pulling out her heart to begin with was such a random act. Like, why would she pull out her heart if she wasn't going to kill her or use the heart to control her? Like, why pull it out in the first place unless she knew she was going to be showing something to Snow that would bother her?
Right. And I could see that it absolutely would, like, blacken your heart or blacken your soul. I could see that as being legit, but I don't think it's going to, like you said, maybe the rest of it is sheer manipulation on her part, that it's going to continue to do that, more that it's just there and that knowledge does affect your action for the rest of your life. I think that's very plausible, but I don't think it means you continue to go down the path of evil. I don't think it has to mean that at all.
I like it. I like it a lot, actually. So we'll put that in our theories pile, our good theories pile, not our crack theories pile. That will come later, I'm sure. So we also see this episode, which I truly enjoyed, is when Regina finally decides she knows who Owen is, or knows who Greg is, and she kind of goes and confronts him. And they have a very angry moment between them, because Greg wants his father back, and Regina's saying he's not here. And the reality of it is, we don't know if his father is there or not, and Regina's insisting that he's not. If his father were there, why wouldn't she just release him? I mean, I think that's my question about the whole situation. Why would she keep him in the first place? So what did you guys think about that moment between Regina and Owen / Greg?
Obviously, if the son has aged accordingly, then did his father age accordingly because he wasn't from Storybrooke? Or is he now the same age? I don't know. I'm really wondering how this all works.
Yeah, we kind of talked about the age thing with, like, in regards to Henry and how it would also have affected the father. And I don't understand, like, I'm so confused as to what Regina's angle is with all of this. But I did really enjoy getting to see the old, like, cool, calculated, and in control Regina, because she was just so smooth with him and just like, well, people disappear. It can happen. And I don't know, just the way that she, like, I was like, ooh, it, because it was like old evil Regina, not like the crazy psycho Regina we had last week.
Yeah.
Right. Or, I mean, I was wondering just, you know, on a practical nature, did she lock him up? I mean, she locked up Belle. You know, could she have locked up this guy? Because obviously he could cross the line and leave because the son did. So did she lock him up? Like, what did she do with this guy? I mean, unless he, you know, accidentally maybe dies in an escape attempt or something. I mean, I don't know.
I think that if she kept him, then she had to have locked him up because he would have left. And the whole thing is even if he left, it's not like he can bring them back there because they can't get back in, as we saw was demonstrated with Owen. So I'm not, like, again, that's what makes it odd for why she would keep him. I'm not really sure why she would do that. And at this point, I think he must have aged because he wasn't part of the curse. So that would be 28 years from when he was, what, in his mid-40s, do you think? Do you know what I mean? That's what's so weird to me, is that he would have to be into his 70s. So, I mean, is there a retirement home in Storybrooke that we have yet to visit? I don't know.
Yeah, because you, like, don't feel like he would give up. Like, he would just continue to do everything in his power just to get out of there. And, like, you, like, even, like, I don't even think for somebody like him, like suicide would not even be the way out. Like, it doesn't matter to me, like, how many years. His thing would be, I have to get out. I have to find my son. Like, that would just, like, that would be his motivation, no matter, like, every day of his life. That would be his motivation. So he's got to be someplace where either he's dead or he's completely, like, locked up, or maybe enchanted under a spell. Maybe he's under some kind of enchantment that he doesn't know who he is. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, that would work too. So I mean, I don't know. That's one of the interesting questions, I think, because I don't think Greg gives up or goes away until that question is resolved. Even though Regina gave him that ever so subtle and polite threat of, you will be leaving tomorrow, or, you know, people do just disappear, which I thought was such a lovely Regina moment, like you said, Jess. I love it when Regina's like that, because, you know, she's in control, and that's just, this is how it's going to be. You can make the choice. This is what I'm giving you. So I always think that that's really fun with Regina. So again, the moment with Greg I thought was really interesting for lots of reasons, because now as an adult, he's very set and this is what he wants to do. And then later, of course, we learn he may have a different agenda altogether. And so we have, like, lots of things going on with that. And what I thought was really interesting is that Regina still had the keychain he gave her. Out of all the things, out of everything in all these years, she still had the keychain that he had given her that day. So it was kind of like, well, Regina, what is that really about? Like, is this a manipulation? Is this, you know, did you really care for the boy? Like, I don't know. It was one of those awkward Regina moments where you just don't know where she's coming from with that background and with still having that item that he had given her.
I mean, for me, it was like the one moment that anybody had ever actually showed her genuine affection, unconditional, and she kept it. Now, granted, her heart was just so, I mean, she's just like, was in no place to genuinely return it, but it was like the only thing that was even close to genuine affection. So I think she probably kept it for that reason.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I thought too.
Okay, so now let's talk about Tamara, and who is she? That's my big question. What is her game? Because as we saw, she was visiting the dragon. She took the potion from August, and clearly she's still alive, so she's still well. And we see that she specifically set out to target Bay. We see that because the story is that he bumped into her while she was on her way to work with coffee. But if you watch it, like in the flashback that we saw, you see August and Bay talking, and then you see her make a point of running into Bay.
And it's important, I think, that she runs into him and not August. So to me, it's
she waited until August left.
It was very calculated.
Like, she used her little mirror compact and was all, you know, stealth.
Right.
So
she is sneaky.
Yeah. And to me, it's like she had to want Bay because let's say her ultimate goal was August. She had him there. Like she met him earlier. Like to me, her goal is clearly Rumple. So by virtue of the fact it was, you know, like she's got an agenda. She clearly has an agenda.
Because here's the very quick in passing comment that was made. It's about her grandmother. So are they witches? Because witches are hereditary. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of one of those things. That's a hereditary fairy tale character, if you will. You know, it's something that's passed along. It's not like Regina kind of thing. It's actually like witches, like, of, you know, as in the Wizard of Oz kind of thing. So is it possible that they're a family of witches? And because they talked about her grandmother and then they talked about her and her need for power. And clearly that's the reason she's come to Storybrooke, is to kind of eat up all the power and take it in. Because that's how she can do what she does to August, is because she's powerful.
Yeah. So, maybe
I don't know.
Wicked Witch of the West kind of thing? Or,
well, do we know for sure that she is something? I mean, I know that she lies through her teeth. Every word that comes out of her mouth is a lie. But there are those moments when you feel like she is kind of being honest and just kind of like whatever. Like when she was talking to August and, you know, she said like, no, I'm human. And I don't know, part of me kind of believed her that she was, or that she is human, but that she somehow has this obsession with magic and like things that you can do. I don't really know what she does with it. I feel like that little stunner thing that she uses is somehow magical. Otherwise it wouldn't have been able to kill August and the dragon, which who is the dragon?
I was thinking he was the dragon from Mulan, but I could be wrong.
I thought the same thing, but he acted like he wasn't from the same world as August. But I don't know. I mean, but I guess it doesn't really matter that much now since he's dead.
Oh, the poor dragon. I don't know. Yeah, I know she said she was human, but something about her leads me to believe that she's not. Or that she somehow can utilize power even if she is human.
Okay, yeah. I don't know. I guess I just feel like I'm like everybody that we meet that we think is human isn't. So I just kind of want somebody. And I know Owen, whatever the heck his double name is, like he seems to be, you know, he is human, but I don't know. I just kind of want there to be these characters who actually are just your normal average human who become interacted with this world.
Yeah. And I can't figure out what her game is with Owen. Like I could understand why she would logically attach herself to Bay or why she would go after August, but I cannot figure out for the life of me what the angle is on Owen. Like, it doesn't, like, who is she going to get at through Owen? Like, I don't, it doesn't, I don't know. It's not making any sense to me. Or is she looking to destroy, like, Neil on a jealousy thing? Like, I'm not getting it. I don't get it.
I think that she and Greg knew each other from before she met Bay. And I think their plan was they somehow found out about Storybrooke and found out about Bay, and once they did, they're utilizing him to get back, because out of everybody he would know. His father's Rumpelstiltskin, how could he not know? So that leads me to believe that somewhere along the line there's something in their background that connects them to Storybrooke, even if they are human. I mean, clearly we know what Greg's connection is. But for Tamara, I really think it has to do with her...
You mean Owen's connection, right? Not Greg. Owen's connection?
Well, Greg and Owen are the same
person. Right. Oh, okay. Right. Okay.
Sorry. I don't know what we want to call him.
I know. It's confusing. But yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing. I feel like, you know, with somebody like Tamara, who is so obsessed with finding magic any way that she can, that she would somehow hear about this little boy who was taken somewhere and then came out with these stories about magic and his father disappearing from this town, and that like she would hear about Greg/Owen and would track him down and manipulate her way into his life because he knows of this town that's full of all this magic. And so then she would use him and manipulate him to figure out a way to get to Storybrooke, and that somehow they would have found out about, maybe even they tracked August and August led them to Bay, and they were like, ooh, well, August knows you, so let's go through Neil/Bay and get to, so we have double ways to get into Storybrooke and to get to the magic and the power, because I have this personal vendetta and you want magic, so let's work together.
And I really feel like there's something with her grandmother, because August specifically brings up her grandmother. And the picture he has in his hand is of her and her grandmother. So that's my thing. Like, I feel like there's a connection there somewhere that we're not quite privy to just yet. That will kind of give us more once we have it. Like, once we know a little bit more about her backstory, other than the fact that she was just sick, that there's something there that connects all of it together. And I do think that Bay was the target. I don't think she fell in love with Bay first and then discovered Greg. I do think that Bay was the goal. If you get to him at some point in time, they will have to, you know what I mean? He'll have to go back.
August is the means to the end.
Well, and Tamara never was really sick. Like, all that was a lie.
Well, I'm not sure.
Like, no, because she says I'm healed, and it healed me, and I'm all better. And I left some of the potion in the apartment back at
That was a lie that she told August, because then we got the scene of her going back to the dragon and, like, and him saying something to her about lying, and she didn't actually take it because she didn't have cancer.
Right, but I'm wondering if maybe... I must have missed that somehow. Yeah, but I'm thinking... Maybe she doesn't have cancer, but she could still be sick. Or, like, define what makes you sick. So, I don't know. I think she... It's so hard to tell when she's lying or not. I just think there's something more to maybe this old sick... if I can speak English. This whole sickness angle, like a sickness of the soul, or even this whole blackening of the heart thing. Like, I feel like this is all kind of coming full circle somehow.
Oh, maybe. I guess I just was under the impression she was using the cancer thing as just the story to get her to... the dragon and the magic, and that was all it was.
Oh, but I agree with that. I agree that was definitely her way in there. I just feel like that there's like in every like well crafted lie, there's a little bit of truth, and I just feel like there's some element of truth in there somehow.
Maybe her grandmother was the one who had cancer.
That could work.
Yeah, that would work as well. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about Tamara. I especially don't like her once she killed August. I was not happy about that. At all. I was a little angry.
Yeah, with the magical taser of doom. I know it's not a taser, right? But really, it looked like a taser. I did not like that CGI. I know we're very CGI heavy the whole series, and I was like, really? It looks like a magical taser. Why? I did not like the way it looked.
Yeah, it wasn't good. But again, she killed August. So we have the death of August where he's trying to tell Emma something. And I really thought he got her name out to Emma, which would have been amazing. But it didn't happen. But the day Emma finds out what went down, I would not want to be Tamara. That is all I'm going to say.
You know what? Seriously.
Major crack theory, and I'm sure this is just totally crack. But now that Disney, who owns Once Upon a Time, has bought the Star Wars series, because, like, how many more gratuitous Star Wars references are we going to get in this thing? How about this really Emperor Palpatine in disguise? You know, the little lightning bolt guy that he, like, shoots in the last couple of movies? Like, there you go. Crack theory right there.
Oh yeah, they said there would be no crossover from Star Wars, but... it's a good crack theory.
The little magic taser is her lightsaber that she uses to control the Force.
There you go. That's it. Exactly. Coming from the dark side.
I can't even right now. I love it. All right. So, like I said, I can't even focus right now. So we get a dead adult August, and then they run and get the blue fairy who says, I think I can do this. And of course, Henry's like, but wait, he was all of these things. He did what he was supposed to do. And so the blue fairy brings him back, and we get this little boy, Pinocchio, like in his little getup. Like, really? I was a little surprised by that. I didn't realize being brave, selfless, and true, like, hit the reset button and made you 5 again in your little hat with feathered cap.
Yeah.
And like, what was that? Really?
Yeah, that was definitely the big WTF moment for me episode.
I mean, I did like the idea that, like, if you think about it, everybody else in Storybrooke got frozen in the time that they were. Obviously, David and Mary Margaret have to deal with the fact that their daughter is now 28 years old. But Geppetto would have, I mean, he never got a chance to have his little boy. So it's great on that sense that the two of them get to have that kind of relationship that they never got to have before. But again, the double-edged sword of that is, does that mean that Emma gets sent back at some point? You know, I agree. It's awkward.
Yeah, it kind of confused me. I didn't get why it was like a whole reset button on this boy's life. That was the part I think was a little sketchy.
The only thing I could think of is that if you had to pick the last time in his life he embodied all of those characteristics was when he was a little boy. And it was only when he was now thrown into this world and really unfairly had to be the guardian to this baby that he had other motivations. So was it a reset to the last time that he was selfless and true? I don't know.
Maybe.
But he was just selfless and true right before that when he turned around and came back to save Emma, to warn Emma. That's why he was allowed to be saved.
Right. Right.
So that's the part I don't get. Like, I don't know why the reset went to, like...
Yeah, because especially when he was, like, a little kid, too. Like, it's like, you know what? So he doesn't get a pass or some kind of nod on, like, he's a kid making a bad decision. Like kids get to be kids. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, that was one of those kind of questioning moments for me. But, well, you know, hopefully that'll resolve itself later down the road. All right, so let's talk, and we talked about this a little bit, but Tamara and Owen, the moment of the, hi, honey, here I come into your room and I'm going to make out with you now, even though Neil, my fiance, is in the shower. I don't even know. I have no idea what to do with Tamara and Greg Owen. We can call him Greg Owen from now on.
There you go. It's kind of like Clawswin in the Hoover Empire. We have Greg Owen, we have Clawswin. There you go.
Greg Owen. So I don't know. Like, I don't even know what to do with that. Like, really? We kind of all, like I said, it's one of those things that annoys me a little bit because I feel like we all called it about 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Like, I was going through listener feedback and there's one glaringly obvious one where I was like, are you part of the show? Are you a scriptwriter? Because you literally called everything that just happened. Like, it was impressive. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what that does. I guess until we get more information on who they could possibly be, there's not a lot more we can say about it than we already have. But it was a moment that was, it was unfortunate because I feel like I want Neil/Bay to be happy, even if it is with the crazy psycho chick. If he's happy, he's happy. But I feel like it's not going to go well.
I was just glad that I was able to rationalize his use of her in the cell phone because it made sense to me in my head. Because
once you met her, you're like, oh, yeah.
Well, because if her name popped up, they, like, for instance, when he was unconscious in the hospital, if instead of seeing her, they had seen Tamara, whatever her last name is, well, then when they eventually met her in real life, they'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And I think that's one of the things we had talked about, like, ages ago when the her thing first came up was like, who would you call just her? And we're like, oh, secret identity. So that works.
Thing is too, is obviously Owen's object is to find his father and probably enact some sort of revenge upon Regina. That would be my assumption. So that's obviously what his priority would be. And it would seem on its face that Tamara's goal seems to be Bay. So I'm assuming what her ultimate goal is Rumpelstiltskin. So I'm wondering, is she, or is it just power? Does she want Rumpel's power and does she want Regina's power? And therefore she's aligned herself with each person who could maybe get her near that person. I don't know.
I think her end goal is power. And she knows that in Storybrooke there is magic and she's come for the magic. She's come to take the magic. I really think that that's what it is. And so somehow she discovered the story behind the curse and everything else, whether she ran into, I don't know, someone that was on the outside that could talk about it or know about it. I mean, I don't know. Did she run into Hook at some point? Did she? Because here's the other thing they mention, and it's mentioned just in passing, is that when Tamara goes downstairs to get her luggage, Hook is no longer there. Not that she would know who Hook was, but clearly she'd be able to be like, yo, there's a dude locked up in our basement. What's going on? Which there isn't. She doesn't mention it. So is she also somehow in cahoots with Hook? And clearly Hook and Bay know each other. So could Hook have set her on the path to Bay? Is she a psycho Tinkerbell? I don't know.
Ooh, I like the idea of Tinkerbell coming up. I hadn't thought about that until you said that just now, but...
So that's my crack theory. She's crazy Tinkerbell. There you go.
Love the idea of who is Tinkerbell and is she transformed? Is she a bad fairy? I'm all sorts of in love with that right now.
So I'm wondering, does she know Hook? Like, could that be it? Because Hook could travel freely. He was never bound by the curse.
Right,
because
he was from another land.
He was in Neverland. So is it possible that she somehow knows Hook and that's the connection? And Hook said, you know, because Hook and Bay obviously knew each other. And obviously Bay made it to our world after being with Hook.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's how he's the age he is because he hung out
right.
with Hook so long as one of the Lost Boys. That's how he is not like 100 years old right now. Yeah.
Right. So is it possible that that is the connection and that is who... Because that would help Hook out with finding Rumple and discovering out where they were if they put a tail on Bay. And he knows who Bay is.
I like that.
So many connections. I feel like I need a roadmap. Like I need a map that like one of the maps that they made for Lost on the Lost website with like the characters and all the lines connecting them. They need to make one of those for once.
I think all roads at this point lead back to Rumple on this one. Like I really do. Other than we're going, all other roads lead back to Rumple, either through Hook or through Bay or whomever. And I think that's our end game is the magic and the power of Storybrooke for Tamara.
I wanted to bring up Emma's promise to Henry because, you know, he's been such a little like, I don't know, just
petulant child.
Yes. About that whole thing. And then she, you know, sat down and made the promise, which... What did you guys think about that? Like, did you feel like she really needed to do that? And is it going to, like, because clearly this is going to be a big thing. So how is it going to come back to bite her?
I felt like Henry needed to be in a space where he appreciated that she was being honest and she really regretted what she said. And it was coming from a complete place of truthfulness. And I feel like because he witnessed what happened with August, that he was now in a space where he could be more receptive to what she was saying. Like, I was really, like, waiting for, like, Henry to get to that point. So that's kind of where I was at with it.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think because so much has been going on with Henry that Emma just needed to kind of clarify and then reassure him again because he's been so challenging when it comes to promises and when it comes to being truthful. Like all last episode, that was his big thing. He kept harping on no one was telling him the truth. No one was telling him the truth. And so I think with everything going on, with Tamara coming to Storybrooke, with, you know, them listening about how Neil and Tamara met and all these other things going on, I think Emma just needed that moment to just clarify and to be honest and to let them know that this was her, you know, she was always going to try for him and always do the best that she could by him. And that it was really important for her to be truthful to him.
You know what's interesting, though? Because I'm just thinking about something. If we're talking about truth here, and truth being a two-way street, the fact of the matter is that Rumple, on no uncertain terms, threatened Henry. And Henry has told neither Neil or Emma about that. So I'm more curious to see where that's going to come back at some point.
Yeah, that is a good point. It should be rather interesting to see it. Again, because that's a poor choice on Rumple's part. Because I think having Bay and Emma angry with him is a dangerous game.
They'll rip him limb from limb. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I think once Bay and Emma kind of settle, or Bay and Neil and Emma, whatever we want to call them, kind of settle back into possibly being together and being parents of Henry, that all bets are off. Like, you thought Snow and Charming were a force to be reckoned with. I really think that Emma and Neil are 10 times more powerful in a sense because of the things that they've went through, because of this curse that kind of destroyed their childhood, that they've now reestablished who they are, and they've been through so many different things. They were never going, you know, their story wasn't ever going to be a happily ever after. That's not how their story started. That's not how it ended the first time. So I think that that plays into it a lot differently.
Right. Well, and the thing is, too, I feel like no matter where any couple is in their relationship, even if they're at a point where they can't stand each other, you threaten their kid and they are going to, I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what they think of each other. They are going to put you in the ground. You know, there is no stopping a parent whose child is threatened. It doesn't matter. You're just going to murder who's ever in front of you.
So that ought to be really interesting. I have a feeling Tamara might be first up to bat on that one, just throwing it out there. So that pretty much wraps up this week's episode and discussion for Selfless, Brave, and True. I can't get that title right. So the next episode now, unfortunately, isn't for like almost a month. These little hiatuses are killing me. So the next episode... What?
They're so frustrating. It happens with Glee, too. And, like, people forget the show's coming back.
I know. It's really annoying. So the next one is until April 21st, which is a long way away. And it is going to be an interesting episode because it is the episode entitled Lacey. Now, this episode is all about Belle because Lacey is Belle's no more amnesia alter ego. And... I watched the Paley Fest panel, and Lacey is evidently very sassy and very much the opposite of the very sweet Belle we've come to know. And I guess she gives some people a run for her money, and Regina becomes friendly with this Lacey because they kind of do well together in the fact that Lacey can be as manipulative as Regina, from what I understand. So that will be a very, very interesting episode, I think. And then we get to meet a very cool, very iconic new character.
Yay! Yes, ridiculously excited. Yes, I love Robin Hood. Love the whole, like, all the Robin Hood stories and everything. Like, I'm so into those. And, like, one of my favorite movies of all time is the 1939 version of Robin Hood. Like, whenever anybody asks, like, you know, what DVDs would you take with you to the desert island? Like, that's at the top of my list. So I'm incredibly excited for Robin Hood to figure into this somehow.
So am I. Like, when I was watching it with a friend, and when they said Robin Hood, I literally, like, started squealing like a 12-year-old girl and jumping up and down in my seat. They were like,
you did the bouncy clap, didn't you?
I so did. I was so excited.
Yes, so I'm super excited. I love me some Robin Hood. So this ought to be fantastic. And so that's pretty much so... a month away. So we have a month to think about Robin Hood and all his delicious glory. Anyway, now that we've lost so many of the other lovely characters.
I know. On a completely
Do we get to keep Robin Hood, please?
Right. On a completely self-serving level, I was like, oh, thank God, now we can work out the Doctor Who debut this week. Like, literally, that's what went through my brain.
And we have one listener feedback to share with everyone. Just real quick. This comes from Lucas. And Lucas says, as a major fan of Once, I'm always recommending the show to my friends. Today, one of my friends said they watched the first two episodes on Netflix and enjoyed them. In order not to spoil anything in future discussions, I decided to go back and rewatch the first two episodes. Throughout the pilot, I get a very different, more whimsical feel than from, say, Welcome to Storybrooke, which is set partly in roughly the same time period. I find the current season 2 episodes to be darker, with more realistic tone than the heavily expository season 1. As I rarely stay with shows, I don't know if it was normal to have such a drastic change in tone over just 2 seasons. Do you believe the writers planned on the show developing into what it is today, as opposed to the equally anxiety-inducing original episodes? I just wanted to get your opinion on the matter and see if you agree about the shift in mood. What do you guys think about this? I definitely think that the first season did have more whimsy to it, but I think it was partly because we needed to be introduced to everyone and their backstories, which brought us back to kind of the fairy tale world, which lends itself to whimsy. Mm-hmm. Whereas this season, it's more about the characters finding themselves and figuring out how to deal with this new world that they're in now that they know who they are.
I think that's also
pretty much exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. It's also like tone too. Like I think a lot of that kind of stuff evolves as the series go on and the writers get more used to who are these actors, and now they can write material that's more tailored to the particular actor playing that character, and the actors sort of find rhythms with each other. And I think some of that just kind of evolves naturally. If you look at the first season of anything, sometimes it's like glaringly painful, but there's sometimes, I think, a very different tone in the first season of anything. And it's just sort of that newness, and then it kind of develops layers into something a little better and deeper. So I feel like that's a little bit more of what it was for me personally.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense as well.
I agree with what both of you guys said. I mean, it's with the whole fairy tale introduction, which lends itself to more whimsy, and just the nature of a television show as it goes on and you get more in depth and get to delve into the characters more and who they are and everything. Naturally, the tone is going to shift and become a little darker with a show like this. I mean, obviously not necessarily with a comedy, but with a dramatic show, like, they do tend to get more serious in theme and tone.
Okay, so that pretty much wraps up our show this week of Onceable. Of course, you can always send us comments at onceable@hypeable.com. You can follow along on Twitter at Once Upon News for all of the latest news and updates. And you can, of course, leave comments on any of the posts, especially the podcast posts, and we always check those out. So thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Jen.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Jess.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.